I want to tell you, though, this morning, and I think this every morning when I get up to speak, it is a privilege to speak to you. And every week when I come, I'm excited to see you. And I know that you guys have made a choice, though, to come. You've made a choice to be here. And I'm just very honored by that choice. And that also that God just has brought us together to love on each other. And this happens in so many different ways. And today it's going to happen with some food, but it happens every week, and it's good. Did I do something there that I shouldn't have done? Oh, no. There. Whew. You never know. You know, I can mess this up with the best of them. But we're talking about life, beauty, and ashes. And it's a series on Ecclesiastes. And one of the ways I want to say Ecclesiastes, there's a lot of ways to describe it. One way is it's a reality check for all of the health and wealth gospel that sometimes goes around that everything, if you do good, then everything is going to be great in your life. And it's going to be smooth, and you're going to rise to the top, and you're going to have a great portfolio, and you're going to have a great life, and all your grandchildren will love you. Speaking of grandchildren, one of mine is here today, so there you go. Just a shameless plug right there. And so that was part of what Ecclesiastes is about. It's a reality check. Say, wait a minute. There's something else that goes on, and it's under the sun that we experience. It's the wisest man in the world came to study what's life really about. And in the end, he said, it's going to be meaningless. And this is what we talked about last week. This word hevel, meaning meaningless or vanity or smoke. And he came to this conclusion. He started out with this and he ended up with this. Everything, life under the sun, everything, he says, is meaningless. And specifically, we talked last week about how pleasure is meaningless. And so if you know, there's the saying, if it feels good, do it. Now, if you're on a diet, there's another saying that says, if it tastes good, spit it out. Some of y'all have been there, but that's a losing weight kind of diet. But I don't go with that, by the way. Wrong. But the idea of if it feels good, do it. And as he did his experiment, as he looked at life, he thought, let's try it. And he held back. He had the means to do anything, have anything he wanted. And at the end of all that, he said, no, it's meaningless. It's like a hangover. Or at least what I understand a hangover is like. I don't know what a hangover is like. But then he also pursued wisdom, being the smartest, being the wisest man. He said that too is meaningless because in the end, a fool and a wise man end up the same. Dead, dust, dust, dust. Here we go. And so we ended up last week, though, in talking about this other teacher who came after this teacher. And it was Jesus who had a different perspective. And while the teachings of Ecclesiastes, I think, are going to be very helpful for us, and especially in just a few minutes as we examine what he says about work, the idea that there is more to it than just life under the sun. There's life beyond that. And as Jesus said, in this world you're going to have trouble, in this world, in this time under the sun, but be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. And as Paul talked about, he says, our eyes are not just on the things we see, not just the experiments of life that we could manufacture, that we could learn from. That's good knowledge. But our eyes are fixed on something beyond that, something that's not seen. And so this is kind of where we came from last week. Now today, we're going to talk about what the teacher in Ecclesiastes says about work. And I'm calling it the gift and the curse of work. And we understand this. I promise you, you understand this. You understand this. So I want to do just a mini kind of test here. And don't raise your hand up big. Just give it a little bit of this, right? That. Just a little that. Baby hand raised. Or if you're shy, just maybe a foot. You know, just this is me. But I'm gonna just read some comments, and you're going to say, if you can relate to this personally, okay? I love my job. I hate my job. I used to love my job. I'm burned out. Boy, those are real small. Yeah. When it comes to my work, I'm a little bit lazy. I don't get paid enough. I saw that one there. Mm-hmm. I need a better paying job. I need a less stressful job. I don't have enough money to retire. My job drains the life out of me. My job energizes me. I need more money. I'm stuck in life because of my job. Now then, here's one. I want you to fill in the blank here. Thinking about my job makes me, just you fill in there, fill in the blank there. Well, this is kind of where we're headed, because this is some of the things that come right from Ecclesiastes, these type of statements, this kind of back and forth statement. But honestly, in all the book of Ecclesiastes, not just the part about work, but all of it. The song we just sang, while the song we just sang, Blessed Be Your Name, really derives from the book of Job, which I call, Ecclesiastes' younger brother, Job. You can't imagine how many students come to ACU and call the class they take Job to Malachi. Yeah, that happens. But his name was Job. Blessed be your name, right? In a land that is plentiful, where the streams of abundance flow, blessed be your name. But the song keeps going, right? When I'm found in a desert place, when I'm walking through the wilderness, when I'm walking down a road marked with suffering, and when there's pain in the offering, he says, blessed be your name. Because life is like this, back and forth and back and forth, and so is work. So to get started here with work, I want us to, on your handout there, I want to ask you, do you remember your first job? Do you remember your first job? Okay, I just want you to turn to your neighbor and tell them your first job. Go ahead, quickly, first job, first job, first job, first job. I'm going to ask some of you out here, okay, Alan Mullins, what was your first job? All right, there you go. Gas. I had a job like that. Mine wasn't a truck stop, but I did pump gas. You know, nobody knows these days what it is to pump gas, right? Who pumps gas? Sherry, what's your first job?
Bob and Linda's Sandwich Shop.
Bob and Linda's Sandwich Shop. You made sandwiches? Yeah. Okay, great. Okay, now then, the next question. A couple more here. Do you remember your worst job? Your worst job. You remember your worst job? Job remembers his first job. He's bobbing up and down. Your first job, your worst job was, maybe you can't say it, right? I don't know, maybe not.
I was a busboy at a nightclub.
There you go. Busboy at a nightclub. I washed dishes at a Chinese restaurant when I was 15. Finally, Dad got tired of taking me to the job and said, you're going to have to get a new job. So, some of us had some worst job experiences. Some of you may actually be in your worst job right now. And sorry for that trouble. But now then, what about your best job? Do you remember your best job? So I'm driving over here with Avery today. And she's my partner, my driving partner today. And we're talking about the sermon. I said, Ave, Avery's not that old, so she doesn't have a lot of work experience. By the way, I have two sons. I want to tell you just quickly about their work experience. One's 41 and one's 42, and one of them, the 42-year-old, has had one job since he's 18. One job. He works at UPS, and he's worked there ever since he started in high school, right out of high school. My other son, who's a year younger than him, is on his 32nd job. And so what I've suggested that they're going to write a two-volume set about work. One is how to get a job, and the other is how to keep a job. Pretty helpful, all right? So I'm talking to Avery, and she's had these two jobs, and her first job was working at a place that sells groceries, okay? She worked there, and that was also her worst job, and now her best job is the one she has right now. And so we're all in our family, we're really excited about Avery's job because it fits her well. She's good at it, and she works at a daycare because she's beautiful with kids. So your best job is maybe the job you have right now. That'd be awesome. Well, when we're going into the book of Ecclesiastes, we're going to read some things that are kind of just, I'm telling you, you think, really? Is this what it says? But yeah, it does. So this is important because so much of our life is about our job. You're going to spend, once you're an adult, about a third of your life at work, and some of us more, right? Some of us, it seems like more than that. So here, I want you to read, though, this is what the teacher in Ecclesiastes says about work, okay? And I'm just going to read this to you. He says, I hate my life. My life is loathsome, and as Avery and I were riding over, we talked about what does the word loathsome mean? Well, nasty. I'm just going to go with nasty. My job is, or as Avery said, ew. My job is ew. And I don't make enough money, and anything that I do make will eventually disappear. That's what Ecclesiastes says. Now, then we're going to go back and read that in just a minute, because what Ecclesiastes also says is, I find satisfaction in my work. I enjoy the fruits of my labor, and my work gives my life meaningful rhythm. What? How does this go? Okay, so we're going to read. I'm just going to read straight out the book. One of the best ways to go, right? So Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And I'm going to start in verse 17. You've got scriptures there on your handout that you can read later, but I'm going to read, and this is going to include some of them. I'm not going to read all of them that are on the handout, but some. So listen as I read, or read along with. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. So I hated my life. No, he didn't say I hated my work. It's like I hated my life. Like sometimes work, if you've been in a really bad job, yeah, you know, it doesn't just affect just your work time. It's like 24/7, your work is causing your life a problem. I hated my life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me, or loathsome, or nasty. All of it is meaningless, chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I toil for under the sun because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. Yeah, my bratty sons, they're going to get all my good junk. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. And yet they'll have control over all the toil into which I poured my effort and skill under the sun. And this too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all. My heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For people may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave it all they own, to others who have not toiled for it. And this too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they work under the sun? All their days of work is grief and pain, and at night their hands do not rest, and their minds do not rest, and this too is meaningless. Right? This is, work is bad. Can we just... And then verse 24, and people can do nothing better than to eat, drink, and find satisfaction in their toil. I mean, like, this is it. He said, work is terrible, but the best thing you can do is enjoy it. What? Okay. And then he says, this too is, I see, is from the hand of God, for without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? So here's the story, and it goes through. This is just not in chapter 2, but this goes on in chapter 5 and in chapter 6, and it keeps going back and forth. Work is rough. Work is great. Work is good. Work is bad. And we just confirmed that, didn't we? When I was asking you with the mini hand raise. Yeah, I've had a bad job. I've had a really good job. I'm looking for a new job. I've got to find a job that pays better. I've got to find a job that's not so stressful. Isn't this all what we've discovered in our experiments called life? Yeah, this is where we are. He's not telling us something we don't know. He's telling us, though, he's summing up the very things that we do know. And so in this work life, whether it's I find satisfaction or whether I find that it's loathsome, either one, what do we do? Where do we go? How do we deal with that? Well, here's what Bob is going to say once again. The teacher in Ecclesiastes was yet to meet the teacher in the New Testament. He was yet to meet Jesus, the rabbi, who's going to talk about life, not just life under the sun, but how life under the sun, work, especially in this world, will benefit us and not just now, but eternally. So we're going to talk about a couple of points I think that Jesus is going to make. But first of all, I want you to see, we were created to work. It's not just in the New Testament where we find this, but in Genesis. The very first job that, one of the very first things God did after he created man was give him a job. And he said, your job is to take care of the earth. The first job was to be a gardener. We're created to work. Human beings are made so that we can work. And our work, and when he did that, at the end of the day, he said, and it's good. It was one of those things that God said it was good. And so work, we had to work. But then there was this incident Sally talked about, the Adam and Eve meeting the serpent incident. And when Adam and Eve met the serpent, Jesus is going to address this later, but God says to them, your work from now on is going to be hard. It's going to be hard. And there's going to be some days, it's going to be so hard, you're going to wish you didn't have work. How many of you experienced that? I just don't want to work today. I don't want to go to work today. I don't want to go to work today. And God says, that's the way work's going to be, under the sun. And so, again, Jesus coming, redeeming work. And well, first of all, before we get to the Jesus part, I want to say some things work was not. Work was not ever meant to be our identity. And yet sometimes that's what it becomes. I don't know about you guys, but in the jobs I've had, and I know some of you, some of the jobs you've had, that it's easy for work to become your identity. This is how it happens in just normal living. We'll walk up to each other, and I don't know you, and I'm going to get to know you, and so I'm going to walk up to a person, and I've not met this person yet. I'm going to say, hi, my name is Bob. And you're going to say, I'll say, what's your name?
Kevin.
I say, oh, Kevin, good to see you. Where are you from, Kevin?
Iowa.
He's from Iowa. And then the next question, what I'm going to ask him, what do you do, right? What do you do? So your identity becomes your name that your parents gave you. It becomes the place you came from, and then it's the job you do. It's the job. Now, I personally had some jobs that, this is even more difficult because I was a coach for a while. And when you're coaching, what happens is people begin to actually call you coach as if it's your name, right? And so I coached for 9 years at Abilene Christian University. I coached for 9 years. And then the thing that happens to coaches happened to me. Y'all know what that means? What happens? Yeah. You're asked to do something else. Yeah. And yet people, so I was working at the same university. I worked there for several years after that before I became a coach again, which, you know, why? Why do that twice? But people still called me coach, which is so weird because I wasn't coaching, but that's what they called me, right? And sometimes then your job becomes, not only are you, it becomes your identity in name, but are you successful at it? Now, coaching, you know, you're successful, you know right off the bat, you know, are you successful or not? Some of your jobs are like that. Some maybe not. But when you're coaching, they put it in the newspaper. You know, you're great, or actually maybe your team is great and you have great players, but you win or else you suck. You know, this is the way it goes in the newspaper. And sometimes people would say things to me that they think are a little bit critical. I said, look, dude, don't worry about it. People call me an idiot in the newspaper. It's not a problem. I'm used to, you know, criticism. I'm a coach. He's a very good friend of mine. His name is Steve. Steve was a coach, and his job became his identity, and then he went kind of downhill because he lost the last 15 games he coached. He lost them. That's how he exited his coaching career. And so when you do that, you kind of feel it kind of impacts how you feel about yourself. Who you are, your identity. Steve went from coaching football to being a director of FCA. Steve was always a successful human being, but he wasn't a successful football coach. Y'all understand what I'm talking about here? Sometimes your work has this impact on your identity, and you're going home feeling bad. Feeling just bad about yourself, about your life, because your work life has pounded your identity. Steve's son is named Case. He's the second string quarterback for the Washington Redskins, Case Keenum. Now, the guy who's right ahead of him is a kid I coached, son, because I coached this kid, Brad McCoy, who coached. And his son is Colt McCoy, and both these two guys are battling it out for the quarterback position of the Washington Redskins right today. And you know what the problem about that is? Their job is going to become their identity. It's such the battle. In some jobs you take it home with you, and you're winning or losing in your head all the time. Okay, other problems about work, and some other just tips, I think. One is the rewards of work and the recognition of work achievements can become dangerous idols. So sometimes, and you'll know this, the rewards of work are money. I'm talking about we get paid. And this is a good thing, by the way. Am I right? Yes, it's a good thing to get paid because we can do things with that money. But you also know stories and stories and stories about people who have lots of money doesn't necessarily make you happy. Am I right about that? We just know because we've experienced life about that. And the same about the rewards, or I should say the recognition for work achievements. Man, sometimes the reason you work, your salary may not be big, but you get lots of credit, lots of esteem building moments where people are telling you, you've done a good job. This is me, and I've told this story here before. When I got the Coach of the Year award in the Lone Star Conference, and I'm sitting, and this is after I've already retired from coaching, and I'm sitting across the table working with a student. I'm in a program called Student Success, and I have this 30-minute meeting with a student about his schedule and about how he's doing in his classes, and I have this plaque behind me, and it says Coach of the Year, Lone Star Conference. Again, Howard should be here to fact check that, but that was a true thing as well. And I see the guy sitting in front of me, and he's from Virginia, and his dad teaches at Virginia Tech University, and he's looking at my plaque, and I'm thinking, oh, that dude has noticed that I am the Coach of the Year. I'm feeling really good. Like he's noting, he's looking, and then we talk, he's looking, and it's kind of distracting me now. He keeps looking at this plaque that's behind me. And I say, so I see you've noticed that I was the Coach of the Year. And he says, yeah. He says, Lone Star Conference. I've never heard of that. Ouch. Yeah, right? Ouch. So this applies both to the rewards that we get from work and the recognition for achievement. The saying, you know, you never see a U-Haul on the back of a hearse. You can't take it with you. This is the point of Ecclesiastes. You can work all you want, dude. You're not going to take it with you. You can have your wall full of plaques. Where are those plaques going to be after you die? Your kids are going to be looking through them saying, what am I going to do with this? Am I right? This is what's going to happen. Okay? And so in both of these instances, these are problems about we have to manage about work. But this is where Jesus comes in. And there's a couple of teachings I want to get to about Jesus. And this is the thing about the teacher in Ecclesiastes. The teacher in Ecclesiastes didn't meet the rabbi from Nazareth. He didn't meet him. He didn't know him. Because Jesus would have said, to gain your life, you need to lose it. Right from the video even this morning. To gain your life, you need to lose it. There's no language like that in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is all about, what's life going to be for me? How am I going to be successful in this life? And he's looking around and says, yeah, it's pretty much, I don't know. It's meaningless. But that's not Jesus. So Jesus, in the New Testament, tells that one of the things you do in everything you do, whether it's big work or small work, whether it's around the house or it's out in the marketplace, you honor God by how you work. And so what are God-honoring ways we work? I just want you to just throw out some things. What are some things you do in the workplace that are God-honoring? I'm going to say one. You do quality work. If I come to you and you're a disciple of Jesus, you represent Jesus by doing quality work. I want to think everybody in the room here is doing quality work. If my kids were going to school and they were in Sally's class, I would think, man, my kid is going to be lucky today. We're having a good year this year because she represents Jesus in her work. Am I right? This is the way we all are. But other things, we're loyal. Followers of Jesus are loyal employees. This is who we are. This is what we do. We're diligent in our work. We show up on time. Amen?
Amen.
I love it. We try. The other thing, we have resources that we can share with others. And this is what, again, I'm going to read from 1 Timothy in a minute, and this sort of comprehensive, I think, teaching from Paul. But we have resources because we work that we can share with others. And right off the bat, we think of money, but it's also the other things that money has bought for us that we can share. And I just want you to think again, what are the resources that we have that we can share with others? Obviously, one is money, cash up money. But there's more than that. There's some of the things that money can buy. One of the things that happens to me on a weekly basis, I come over to Arlington and I go and I sleep in the Carlson's house because Art and Betty have worked. And their work has provided them with a house for me to get to sleep there. And I'm a happy boy about that. And everything you've got, God has given you the ability to work so that now you can earn, so that now you can buy, so that you can share. Now, this is the difference between a person who hoards, and we got a lot of hoarders, and sometimes I might be about certain things. I've looked through some, man, maybe you're like this. I have a box. Okay. I have several boxes of old T-shirts that have different kinds of, right? And why? Why do I have that stuff? Yeah, it's nostalgia. And you know when I'm going to look at it? Never. I just know where it is. It's in, you know, why? And maybe you're like that too. I've just got stuff that I don't really need. But here's the thing. God gives us the ability to work. We get paid. We buy stuff to share, not hoard, to share with others. And it is in the sharing of others that we become, I think, joyful in our work. So we have this I call this related thoughts, the idea of worry and trust. One of the things about working, and this is, again, part of the teaching in Ecclesiastes, especially in Ecclesiastes 5, that I'm not going to have enough. I'm going to work, but I'm not going to have enough. And this is a worry for, I think, all of us a lot. And so for me, it's a trust issue. Do I trust God to take care of me? Well, this happened to me over the, I've done this before, but especially in New York when I was there this last summer. I walk a lot in New York, much more than here, but still I walk. I'm out on the sidewalk. I'm in the parking lot. And like you, perhaps, from time to time, I notice someone has dropped a coin on the parking lot. Yeah? Ever done? I always pick them up. Always. And I save them. Okay? So it's almost always pennies. Pennies don't buy much these days, maybe ever, but for sure. Okay, so, but here's what I did. And I was telling my grandson, we were walking in from the parking lot at the grocery store 2 days ago. This happened 2 days ago. And I said, I saw a penny, I picked it up, put it in my pocket. And I said, you know, Jude, what I do when I do that, I take that as a message from God that God will always take care of me. And he will always give me everything I need. Okay? And Jude says this to me, really, Pop? Okay, and then what's coming next? I don't know. I said, yeah. He said, so God really gives you everything you need. Like, he's a little skeptical. And so I had to think to myself, wow, do I really believe that? Do I really believe that God is going to take care of me? Because part of me wants to tend to worry about my finances. I know none of you have that problem. But for me, sometimes I worry about my finances. And I worry, is God going to take care of me? Now, this doesn't mean that I might not squander some of the ways God has taken care of me. I mean, have y'all ever wasted money? Well, different sermon for that. But I always want to read, I want to end up today reading from 1 Timothy. And again, the Bible says some just outrageous things, right? I mean, how can this really, is this really true? And this is like Jude asking me, do you really think God's going to give you everything you need? So here's Paul giving Timothy some of these end-of-life instructions. Starting in verse 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. What he's just talked about before this is there was a group of men in the church, probably the Ephesian church, where they thought that if they worked it just right, they could get a financial benefit from being a Christian. Maybe some people might even do that today, you know, try and get financial benefit from being a Christian. Let's do a little fundraiser here. But he says this, but godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world and we can take nothing out of it. By the way, he's quoting Ecclesiastes or perhaps Genesis. It's in both of those places. We can't take anything with us. No U-Haul behind the hearse, right? But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. That's where I want to say, really? I'm really not, I don't know if I am content with food and clothing. I need a few other accessories. I like my iPhone. There's so many other things besides just food and clothing for me to be content. But this is what he says, contentment. Can we be content with that? I want you to think about that. How much do I really need? And so when I'm talking to my grandson and he says, God's going to give you everything you need, yep. If I boil it down to food and clothing, I'm really looking at a house that, well, never mind, that's a different story. But okay, so food and clothing. And he says, those who want to get rich fall into a temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. This hunger for more. Thanks, Jeanette. Keep going. And then he says, command those who are rich in this world, get that part? not to be arrogant and put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God. Now, you notice he doesn't say for the rich folks to give all their money away. He does tell a rich guy that in Luke 18, but that's not the universal teaching for everybody who's rich. So, but what do you do? He says, well, put their hope in God. God, richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. I want you to think about that. God, part of the reason he's given you a job so that you can earn money, so you can buy stuff to enjoy as well. But it doesn't end there. He says, command them, that's the rich, to do good and to be rich in good deeds and willing to share. God's given you a job. That job has given you money. The money is for you to take care of yourself and be content with food and clothing and enjoy the things that your money can buy and share. And share. And in this way, you'll lay up treasure for them. They'll lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they can take hold of the life that is truly life. And once again, this idea of the life that is truly life, it's not meaningless. And neither is our work meaningless. In these ways, it's not meaningless. Summarizing, our life, work, our work and our life have meaning because we honor God with our work. Our life and our work has meaning because we use our work and the things that our work does for us to share with others. And in these ways, God has blessed us with the gift of work. Now, does that mean that there is no curse of work? Nope, there is. Because sometimes you don't like your job. And sometimes your boss is unreasonable. And sometimes your boss is you. You're the unreasonable boss. And sometimes work's too hard, and sometimes you don't get paid enough. But in these moments, what God promises is, he's going to take care of what you need. He's going to give you what you need. Now, we're going to sing this song, and I'm going to say a comment about it afterwards. As we sing the song, Life Song, one of the reasons I wanted to sing Blessed Be Your Name and Life Song kind of around this sermon is because both of these, I think they give a different degree of interpretation and meaning to the idea of work and work being a gift and a curse. The idea that I want to bless his name. I want to say, praise you, God, on my best days at work and also on my worst days of work. Being an 0-15 coach did not make Steve Keenum a failure as a human being. Wasn't too good as a coach. And on those worst days of work, I want to say, blessed be your name. On days when I'm failing at work or work is failing me, I'll say, blessed be your name. Thank you, God. I have a job. It's a bad one, but I have a job. And there may be another one for me in a different day, in a different time, right? And God is giving all I need. And then the other thing is that I want to honor God with my work in every kind of way. At the end of the day, I want to be able to, like the song says, I want to sign my name at the end of this day that all my work has honored Jesus in the way that I've done it, the way that I've gone about it, the way my attitude that I've demonstrated there at work, that God would get glory from the way that I went to work today. Let's stand and sing.